Welcome to Cashing In on Content Marketing. Each week, marketing experts will explain how to measure your content marketing results and communicate that value to stakeholders. I'm your host, Fractal Marketing Director, Amanda Milligan. If you didn't catch last week's episode, I recommend you checking it out first, as this is part two of a conversation between CEO of RankSense, Hamlet Batista, and the Senior Vice President of Creative at Fractal, Kristen Tinsky. In the last episode, entitled How Programming and AI Can Improve Your Content Strategy, they discussed specific applications for programming and AI if you're working in content marketing at all. However, in this week's episode, they zoom out a little bit and talk about how innovations like GPT-3 can fundamentally change the way that online content and search function forever. If you don't know what GPT-3 is, don't worry, you can follow along. But I will tell you, it's an autoregressive language model that uses deep learning to produce human-like text. That's the Wikipedia rundown. It's really smart and kind of scary how well it can replicate human language. So at the beginning of this conversation, you're kind of jumping in mid-conversation in this episode. Kristen and Hamlet are talking about some of the things they've discovered that GPT-3 can do, and then they start getting into what they think that means for the industry. And one last thing, there's even more to this conversation. In fact, there's a video of Hamlet discussing the really specific, tangible applications that AI can have and programming can have for content marketers. If you're interested in that, I'm going to be sending it out to our podcast newsletter subscribers. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, just go to the podcast page on the Fractal site and subscribe there. I'll also have a way to sign up in the show notes. So let's dive in.
But GPT-3, somebody just made a kind of like a toy website that basically does movie, book, music recommendations based on just a natural language input. So you can say, for instance, you know, I really like the movie Princess Bride, but I want something that's in the horror genre, but very similar to that movie. And it'll give you a really coherent list of something very similar to that. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you could really give it any sort of prompt that you want it to. You know, like, I like near future sci-fi movies where the villain wins in the end. And it'll give you whatever three movies match that. So it's enabling this new sort of search within huge spaces of data. Really, GPT, in my opinion, represents almost the whole of collective English language knowledge. And when you can give it natural language queries like that, and it gives you coherent, creative responses that match very, very closely to what you're asking, it's, in my opinion, a complete change, paradigm shift in search of all types. You know, web search, recommendation engines. I think it's going to change everything. And the implications for content marketing and for SEO are absolutely massive. Like, even beyond the implications of automated content creation, the implications for transformer language models being used as search engines, I think will enable Google, or maybe some competitor if they do it first, although I think that's unlikely, will enable them to crowd out even more search results in favor of their own answer box results. Which is crazy.
No, that's insane. But think about that. Microsoft invested $1 billion on OpenAI. So they have access to GPT-3, right, for Bing. So it's going to be interesting, Google's response, because Google has T5, which is GPT-3 has an order of magnitude more parameters. So I think, you know, Google's already, you know, if they're not, you know, Google is probably the most paranoid company that is out there. So they're probably already working on a response to this because it's, as you mentioned, it's challenging their business. And this is funded by Microsoft, which has the major competitors are changing. So,
yeah. But what's interesting to me about that is like GPT-3 is essentially the same architecture as GPT-2 and other transformer-based models. Like the architecture itself isn't some like proprietary thing that can't really be replicated. I mean, maybe to a limited extent it is, but I don't think it's, whatever OpenAI has built isn't so far ahead of the curve that Google or Salesforce or any of these other companies that are playing in the space won't be able to replicate GPT-3 with enough money and compute resources. I think that, I forget what the exact amount to train GPT-3 was, but I think it was
$10 million.
$10 million?
Yeah, it wasn't that a lot. It wasn't
that's a drop in the bucket for Google, right? Like imagine what happens when you spend $100 million or $1 billion on training a language model that, you know, is another two orders of magnitude beyond GPT-3, when right now a lot of indications are that scaling it will realize gains similar to what we've seen between GPT-2 and GPT-3, between GPT-3 and GPT-4 or 5. When what we have with GPT-3 now is so mind-blowing, like it passes basic Turing tests. It's just insane. I can't imagine that Google and others aren't already probably spending $10, $20, $50 million trying to create, you know, GPT-5 or the equivalent.
No, and I agree. That's what I say, that remember, we're still halfway through 2020, right? That's the mind-boggling part, right? So if you look at this year, we had T5 was the first time, right? We have Turing NJ from Microsoft, right? It's very fast. We are growing exponentially, right? And now, you know, OpenAI comes with this, right? They're going to come up with the next one because they have the resources, they have the scientists, they have the people. And as you mentioned, there is no new novelty in the algorithms. And I'm excited about two things, right? Is, okay, we have GPT-3 and it's not something that they can open, that we could use without the API because of the massive resources required for it. So I think there are two tracks, which is how do I take, okay, now that GPT-3 can do this, how do we shrink it so that it could be used in regular computers without having to do an API, right? So that's one part. But the improvements to the T5, which is the competitor to the GPT, you know, algorithms, or the Turing NJ from Microsoft, right, is also going to be competing with them. Beefing up their parameters, adjusting the architecture a little bit. You know, the GPT-3 became a little bit wider to be able to accomplish that. But it's what you mentioned. They're predicting the next token based on the previous ones. It's a very simple process. I'm going to predict the next one given the previous context. And then it keeps doing that. And it probably, the GPT is the simplest of the architectures. T5 could do what you were describing, but because it's a smaller model, you could describe on T5, you know, without having to. The interesting thing that is happening with these larger models, T5 and GPT-3 and Turing NLJ, is that you don't have to fine-tune. You realize that there is no fine-tuning because you can give just one example and it will do this, or you can do a single shot, or you can do a three examples, and then it will. That's replacing the fine-tuning step that you'll have to do manually programmatically. Now we're choosing the prompt. This is the examples, complete the rest, right? And, you know, it's mind-boggling, right? But another question on this, right? So with this happening, how do you see the role, right? Because another concern that people might have is, how is this going to affect marketers? How is this going to affect our jobs in terms of what is it going to be replacing? Because we're seeing some replacement happening. You know, Microsoft replaced a bunch of content curators now they're using the AI for that, right? Have you thought about that? What are the implications of that, right?
Yeah. First, I wanted to mention what you were saying about the zero shot or few shot capabilities of GPT-3, especially in reference to less technical people being able to use technical tools as a superpower. What's super interesting to me about the zero shot, few shot approach of GPT-3 is it's like you said with GPT-2, if you wanted to get GPT-2 to do something really cool, like say writing poetry, you would fine tune it on a lot of poetry examples or music lyric examples if you were doing that. Or if you wanted to make it, like I did a project where I made GPT-2 talk like Donald Trump. So I trained it on, fine tuned it on a bunch of Trump speeches. That worked pretty well. But with GPT-3, because it's been trained on, you know, an order of magnitude or several of orders of magnitude more data, you don't need to do that fine tuning. So in order to get those types of results, all you really have to do is construct a good prompt for it, mm-hmm. which honestly isn't that hard, although there is an art to it. So saying like, the following is a speech written by Donald Trump about XYZ thing, it'll write in his style, but you can get it to do better or worse by changing, you know, playing with the parameters and their values, trying different prompt types, giving it more or less detail or more or fewer examples. But what strikes me as being so interesting is the democratization of how really all you have to do is construct prompts to get a result. You don't have to do this technical fine-tuning process anymore. And the next few iterations, I think, will make it even easier for novices or non-technical people to leverage these tools to do amazing things. And even sometimes to be the people who discover new aspects of these algorithms. So if you give it this type of prompt, or you ask it this thing, or you give it this caveat or this type of example, it will do this better or worse. So I think people are already discovering, you know, some of the benchmark tests that were done with GPT-3 versus other state-of-the-art algorithms. You know, it was measuring on par or slightly better across a bunch of these different types of tests or tasks. But already people are realizing improvements over other state-of-the-art models just with better constructed prompts. So that's super interesting to me. Getting back to the future of content marketing, content generation, and search, like I said earlier, I think GPT changes multiple aspects of it. I think it's going to change search engines in that they're going to be able to give like one box answer results much across a much wider swath of the long tail than they were ever able to before. And instead of serving up web pages as answers, they'll just serve up text answers that are essentially a synthesis of lots of different sources done by a transformer model. That I think will potentially shrink the long tail opportunity of content marketers. So there'll just be fewer things that you can rank for because Google is serving results from a language model instead of a list of websites. Also, it will erode really that whole middle to bottom section of quality, you know, mid and lower tier quality content. When a transformer model can write as well as a professional, in a lot of cases, depending on the domain that you're writing in and how much data it had trained on it. Within the marketing space, it's been trained on a ton of marketing articles, so it does very well across a whole huge variety of marketing topics. There's not going to be room for people who are writing blog posts about, you know, things that aren't really presenting something entirely new, that aren't innovative in their own way. You know, regurgitated stuff that's been said before is stuff that can be written by GPT-3. In fact, GPT-3 can even do better than that. It can synthesize new ideas by combining disparate articles. So it's elevating the content bar even higher than it has been elevated over the last 5 or 10 years just due to natural competition. And so I think content marketers and content creators and SEOs need to continue looking for ideas that require more human intervention and effort in order to create an interesting end result. Something that is the synthesis of disparate ideas or taking new technologies and applying them to old ideas, or doing things like what Fractal really does a lot of, which is data journalism. You know, diving into data sets and exploring them and finding new and newsworthy information from within that data. That's something that I don't think GPT-3 can really do yet, at least not well. So there's still a domain where humans are obviously superior and probably will be for, I don't know, who really knows, 5 years, 10 years, and then all bets are off. You know, then who needs humans to create content when GPT-3 is like the smartest human that ever existed and can be manipulated in any way you want to create anything that you want? You know, that's a change for all of humanity, really.
Yeah, and I think from what you're mentioning, I think one area that I think is probably going to still be owned is going to be proprietary data, right? So GPT is trained on public data, right? But what about the data that is proprietary to the companies in the industries, right? And you could say, okay, wow, but the companies could, you know, use GPT-3 combined with private data to produce information, right? But that's still going to require human skill to be, you know, doing that, you know, combination of how do I now expose GPT, you know, X to the proprietary data that I have, right? So that it can surface new information that is not public domain, that is, you know, new insights that are not, you know, public, right?
Yeah.
And that's gonna, and that highlights the importance of what we were talking from the beginning, right? This is also job security, right? Learning this stuff, this technology, and being on, you know, like you're doing, going at the state of the art and looking what is possible, is helping you look at what's coming so that the wave doesn't crash on you when you don't even realize, because you're not even paying attention to what's happening around you, right? And you say, wow, you know, suddenly from one day to the next, I don't have a job writing content because what I was writing, a machine can do it faster and better, and I didn't even realize it. I wasn't even aware that this would, or how do I retrain, you know, my company, my staff, everybody to adjust to this new world that is coming to us faster than we even think it is happening, right? And adjusting, because that's what another advantage of being, you know, looking at the state of the art, you're looking at the storm before it's coming so that you're preparing ahead of it. And you said, okay, that's going to come. What are the adjustments that I have to do so that I still stay relevant, right? And I think that obviously there's going to be, like in every revolution, right, there is jobs that disappear, but they transfer to other areas, right? So that doesn't mean that, oh, now we have a lot of people that are without jobs and there's nothing for them to do. No, there's always going to be something to do because, you know, the amount of things that need to be done is infinite, right? But you, how fast can you retrain? How fast can you adjust and learn these new skills, right?
Yeah. I didn't mean to paint it all as a like a doom and gloom scenario, because I completely agree with what you're saying. Like, these new technologies will enable new types of jobs and new types of work processes that will make us all a lot more efficient, I think. And one of the things I'm most excited about with these transformer models is how they can be used as a type of creative assistant or writing assistant. You know, they're really incredible at doing things like coming up with ideas. In fact, I was just playing with it this morning. Fractal's ideation process is a very, very human intensive thing, right? So we use our entire creative team for each client that we're coming up with concepts for. And it requires, you know, finding data sources, being familiar with data sources, being familiar with what content has been popular for whatever topic area we're using. Sort of like this holistic understanding needs to exist within each person coming up with each idea. And what's so interesting about GPT-3 is because it is the collection of essentially all human English language knowledge, when you give it the right prompts to come up with ideas, it will give you very novel things in return, stuff that you maybe would have come up with on your own, but maybe not. So for us, I'm really excited about the potential of GPT-3 for helping to enhance our ideation process, but also in the content writing process. You know, you can use it as a writing assistant and it will just make your writing better. I mean, even something super basic, like you give it a 500 word article and say, rewrite this for an audience 10-year-old, you know, for somebody who's 10 years old, it'll rewrite it in a format in language that explains things more simply, or vice versa. You know, take this legalese or take this natural language and turn it into legalese, and it can do that too. Or just polish it, or you could just give it adjectives and say, give it more flowery language, and it'll do that. Like, it's just absolutely incredible what some of these implications are for stylistic enhancements, for paraphrasing, for adding detail, for adding, you know, adding additional types of creative language within your writing, for improving organization. Like, there's just there will be many startups that will leverage this to create writing assistants that will make us all faster, better writers. But that in and of itself also creates more competition, right? Like, more people creating more good stuff. It all comes back to the same kind of principle. You're going to have to elevate.
Raises the bar, right? So, yeah. Which I think is, you know, if you think as a society, that's a net positive, right? So if everybody, if their low, you know, quality stuff gets getting pushed down, right? we're getting to enjoy better content, better information, right? Which is just what's happening, right? And we get to, you know, have, you know, more enjoyable, you know, lives, you know, as a population. So I think pushing people to do better, right, is net positive, you know, and pushing them to do things that are more innovative and, you know, and can add greater value to society because, and you see that's happening, right? It's happening because think about 4 or 5 years ago, the content forms, all this stuff pushing it, that wasn't a net positive for society. All this stuff that they were pushing and all that stuff, for all the complaints that we have about Panda and all this stuff happen. We'd rather have, when you're researching something, useful stuff, and when you say, wow, you know, this really helped me, right? Especially when we're writing code, if we have a problem and then the first solution is not good, right, we're going to be wasting time with it. But the fact that really good stuff surfaces helps us be even more productive because we're getting to the
yeah,
our task faster.
I agree with that, although I do have reservations and concerns about the reemergence of what we've seen in SEO and content in the past, where people use article spinning or, you know, like find and replace type of stuff, or just more recently, more advanced stuff that does like abstractive summarization or whatever, like GPT. Mm-hmm. 3 will enable, you know, somebody to write 5,000 articles in an hour. And those articles are probably better than 60-70% of other articles written by humans on the same topic. So what happens when, you know, this technology is so well democratized that, you know, anybody with even a small amount of knowledge can implement that?
That's going to be a challenge for the search engines to weed that out, right? And they're probably going to start already working on the research to try to find. And it's going to raise the bar for them as well, because now they're going to have to not just look at the language and the content, but look at whether there is new insights out of it. Because that's one way that you can tell the generated thing from the real thing. A human can read it and say, wow, did I learn something new or not? It was just a combination. Or did it make any sense? The arguments presented correctly, or, you know, did it show me something useful or new or not, right?
Yeah, but what's changed with GPT-3 versus GPT-2? So like with GPT-2, I did like this proof of concept thing called This Marketing Blog Does Not Exist, where I generated hundreds of articles with it. And like 90% of them, if you were skimming, you might not notice, but almost all of them could be identified by a human as computer written. Because they didn't add that much value, right? Like in some places they added like common knowledge type value, stuff that it had seen a million times before. But with GPT-3, it writes articles that actually have value. I mean, it's not the same value as you would see with stuff that like you write or industry experts write, or, you know, real professionals write. But it's still better than what a lot of other people write. So how does Google handle that? How do they grapple with that when these new language models can write better than some non-trivial percentage of the human population and can put out content that has arguably has good value? You know, you can't just say Google can, train a model to identify transformer generated language. You know, there are some advancements on that front. Maybe they'd implement something like that in their algorithm. You know, this was written by a machine, discount it. But it's not obvious that they should do that, because some of the content that these models are creating is more worthwhile than what the humans created.
Yeah, I think one approach, there could be multiple approaches, but one approach would be with the knowledge graph, understanding who is who, right? Having an identity tied to the content. So because you say, okay, that was written by Hamlet, that was written by Kristen, right? And we know their style of writing, right? And we know what are, so I think they'll have to, in order to separate the machine from the human, they will have to keep track of the humans. They will have to keep track of your who you are, what do you produce, what is your area of expertise, what are you talking about, what are the contributions that you're adding, and do it by elimination. Anything else that you say, okay, this is anything else that is not by these humans that we know is probably, you know, computer generated. That could be a potential. So I'm saying that it is not impossible. But there could be ways to do it, right? So, yeah, so I think for a period of time, like we have, right, all this computing is going to generate a lot of stuff, you know, it's going to be, you know, while the search engines are trying to figure out how to isolate, because I think they're going to want some computer generated stuff that is actually useful, right? And they'll say, okay, this is actually providing value, but new stuff. Mm-hmm. But that could be one way to do it. Keeping track, you know, that they have the knowledge graph. Who are the experts? What is it they write about? What is it that they typically write? Can Hamlet write 10,000 articles in one day? No, it's not realistic. So there are ways that even if a computer say, pretend, okay, I'm Kristen, I'm writing this, I typically write this, and I'm writing 100 articles per day. Oh, not possible, right?
Right.
But I can't wait to see what's happening. It's going to be an exciting thing to watch.
Well, I actually love that point that you're making about how this will sort of, it's going to sort of force the conversation around anonymity online. Mm-hmm. So the implications for social media and for e-commerce, I think, are as big or even larger. So what happens when you have anonymous or pseudo-anonymous communities like Facebook or Reddit, or Amazon reviews, or eBay reviews, or reviews of any type, really, in any location, or polls, or, you know, all of these various things where people can submit their personal information about how they liked a product, or whatever, you know, or their opinion on X topic on Facebook, or on Twitter, or on wherever. When you have a natural language model that can, especially for short form stuff like tweets or comments, you know, even stuff up to like 500 characters or whatever, how can you trust anything anymore when you can't tell the difference? It's just, you know, once this technology is in the hands of a lot more people, it's going to be just as likely that whatever review of whatever thing you're buying or looking at was written by a machine as it is that it was written by a human. And the same thing goes for comments on any story that you see on Facebook or on Twitter. Like, it'll just be just as likely that it was written by a bot and you can't tell the difference. So what does that do to anonymity and online? It's exactly like you're saying. It's going to result in a point where people will only want to participate if they know that the people who are saying things are real people, which means that you'll have to have some sort of identity, verified identity attached to you online. And I think it will erode trust in Amazon. I think it will, you know, maybe kill Facebook. I mean, that's a bold statement, but I think some of these technologies really have the potential to so completely erode trust that what's being said by quote unquote somebody else online is maybe not a real person.
No, that's what you're mentioning is, that's what I said. I can't wait to see, you know, this is kind of like a crazy inflection point that is happening right now. And you mentioned the reviews, right? I mean, imagine, right? How much do we depend on our purchasing on reviews, right? And trusting that they're real, that they're not computer generated and stuff. And I think that the systems to prevent them, they have grown in a little bit of sophistication, but I don't think they're ready for what's coming, right? They're not ready. The systems, the defense mechanisms to detect fake stuff, right? Especially when the incentive to fake them is so high, right? So you have the search results with the traffic and you have the reviews, you know, which is also powerful stuff. Now you can generate things, right? It's gonna be crazy and intense, but it's also opening a lot of opportunities because you think every change is just opportunity for everybody, content writers now. You know, think about all the studies and all the research you can do about, oh, what's fake, what's not, and what, you know, and all this data journalism, like you mentioned, can be done just about what's happening and what's real, what's not, and the implications, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree. You know, with these new disruptive technologies, I think they eventually always lead to something better. But in the interim, what you get is this crazy arms race. And that's what's super interesting to watch. And if anything, it just makes me want to understand it better and stay on top of the state of the art, because the people that aren't won't be aware of what's happening around them and won't be able to capitalize on these new technologies. So,
or even adapt, as we said, right? Or adapt quickly.
Or adapt. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's just one other thing I wanted to mention about GPT-3 that I find really interesting is, like I said earlier, I really think it is like talking to somebody like a really well-educated adult that has read and understands literally every topic imaginable. And so you can ask it questions that will almost guaranteed yield results that are interesting and novel. And one of the ways to do that I've found so far is by asking it to assume the personality of someone. So like, for instance, you could say, the following is a conversation between Stephen Hawking and Einstein about their disagreements over the nature of gravity. And what it will produce is a chat conversation, or you could have it write an essay, whatever you wanted, that would literally understand the nuanced differences between both of their positions on that very specific topic.
Wow.
And give an output that makes sense. So in my opinion, that ability to take two disparate opinions or positions and to integrate them and to give a coherent understanding of what their differences are and what their agreements are, that's something that until now has been only in the domain of humans. But GPT-3 can clearly do it. So you take that example that I gave you and you can apply it to literally any combination of experts of any topics that you want. So that to me is one of the most exciting things about it, is that it's opened this door to having a conversation with or between models of people or topics that represent a holistic understanding of that topic or two topics or three topics and the synthesis between them. And that to me feels like super low hanging fruit in terms of content creation. You know, just that example that I gave, like it would be interesting for me to read. I want to know how Stephen Hawking and Einstein would have disagreed about gravity. I don't know what the answer is to that, but GPT-3 could tell me.
Wow, that's incredible. And Christian, do you imagine, you know, in your wildest dreams that you will see this so early, right? That you will see these kind of advancements when you started a couple of years ago playing with this, dabbling with this state of the art? Do you think like 2 years later, I'm going to see this crazy stuff so early happening?
I think it's surpassed my expectations. Like,
and again, we're only halfway to 2020, right?
It might even
go even crazier by the end of the year.
I don't think that GPT-3 represents like true general artificial intelligence.
No, it isn't. But think about, do you imagine, right, that this will, you know, that we will see this by this so fast?
I'm really excited and scared by what the upper limit is of transformer networks, because to me, it feels like a fundamental advancement, something so big that it will transform things like the internet transformed things. And to know that we're only, you know, that there may be several orders of magnitude more to go, and that the gains that we saw between GPT-2 and GPT-3 might pale in comparison to the gains that we'll see between GPT-3 and GPT-4 or 5. I can't imagine what those systems will be able to achieve. I think it will be like talking to, I mean, this sounds crazy, but something superhuman, really.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think it's just insane. And the thing is that exponential curves are not intuitive. We don't see exponential, right? But that's what's happening. That is what's happening. It's we're in an exponential curve, and it's insane, right? What is going on? Right.
It is, because this is, you know, this is just one small area of technological advancement, and not all of AI is moving as fast as language AI. But each of these new breakthroughs and the mixing and matching of them between different industries or scientific disciplines.
Well,
it's those new combinations that we're talking about, those cross-domain applications that are realizing these completely new disruptive technologies.
And well, let me say, it wasn't that way, because computer vision was ahead, because computer vision had transfer learning before NLP. It's just that when NLP was unlocked with Elmore, you know, performers. That is when people say, wow, we can get the same, you know, common sense. I know what you think about common sense knowledge is that of transfer learning is common sense knowledge, right? It's kind of like having that common sense so that you can build top of something that is already. And that computer vision was the first to tap into that. And I was fortunate I started playing with that and learning about it a couple, two years and a half ago when it was, you know, servicing. But NLP was not, you know, accomplished that. Now people realize, wow, we can do the same thing with NLP. And taking it so incredibly far that, no, I tell you, it's just insane. And the thing is how joyful it is to be able to play a role in this, right?
Oh my gosh,
yeah. Small role in our space that we can, wow, we can understand these things. Understand them enough to come up with applications that are useful in our industry and also get other people excited about it, right? Hey, look, you know, and I think that's one of the key parts of the movement in the community around Python that, hey, look, this is not just engineering and coding and all this stuff. And there is practical business value on this. There is ROI on this stuff. We go back to the content stuff, right? There is value in investing in understanding and applying this even enough so that you can provide guidance to somebody that will deal with the code, right?
Yeah.
But it's, and we're halfway, I should repeat that again, halfway through the year. There is still enough time to jump in the bandwagon before.
there's so much time. Like you said, we're right at the beginning of the knee of the curve of exponential growth. And the emergence of things like GPT-3, they're signals that we should be getting on board now. But it really all comes back to, if you're not a technical person or you've never programmed before, how do you get the motivation and get excited to learn what you need to learn in order to be, to have enough information to be able to play with these things? And I think it starts with reading about what the capabilities of these new tools are and what can be done with them, and then thinking critically about what their applications are for your particular use case or industry. And once you've done that critical thinking, you'll be able to come up with concrete ideas of how you might want to apply those technologies. And once you have that, then you'll have the motivation to dig in and learn how to accomplish what you want. And I think that's been key for me. And I think that's where the real learning happens. So, you know, if our discussion of GPT-3 hasn't made you excited about it, I'm not really sure what will. But the truth really is that if you even are willing to teach yourself, you know, with a couple months worth of work, basics of Python, it will open a door to literal superpowers.
Absolutely.
And that I think people don't get enough. Superpowers, stuff that will make you so much smarter, so much further ahead of the, you know, the average curve. It's worth it to do it.
For more insights and exclusive resources on how to justify content marketing, join our email newsletter by going to frac.tl, clicking on our work, and then podcast. See you next week.